Hello and welcome to this episode of Stories of Hope by Kangaroo Minds. I am Vedika and today we have with us Ira Khan. Ira is the founder and CEO of the Akatsu Foundation. Ira has lived with clinical depression since the age of 18 and was recently diagnosed in 2019. The kindness in Ira's heart is only rivaled by the fierceness of her spirit. Akatsu is Ira's invitation to everyone to confront the unknown and find their own truth. Besides all the work she does in the space of mental health, Ira is also a level one trained Krav Maga practitioner, a rescue scuba diver, and also has a keen interest in theater. Before we begin and hear more from Ira about her journey and her learnings from along the way, we would like to put out a trigger warning for our audiences. If at any point during this conversation, should you find yourself feeling triggered or distressed, we urge you to take a step back and look after yourself. Should you need any additional support resources, you can also find them on our website. And now, without taking over more time, I'm going to hand over to Ira. Ira, welcome to the episode. It is so lovely to have you here with us today.
Okay. Hi. So we've been trying to do this for a while now to schedule this, and it's called Stories of Hope. So I wanted to make sure that I was in a hopeful place because as I tell you my story, you will find out that there are ups and downs and ups and downs. And well, yeah, I think sharing your story is important to share on a public platform when you're healed a certain amount. With your friends and family and people you care about, please share when you're feeling horrible, not hopeful. All that's fine, but when you're sharing on a public platform, I wanted to make sure that I've healed. So it's been some back and forth, but we're finally here. And right, my story. So I found out different things about my depression and about bad behavior through these many years. And now being asked to look back on it, I should tell you in, whether I should tell you what I figured out now about then, and again, it gets a little confusing. So if I ramble a little, but it is a very complicated back and forth process of what you figure out and then how you behave and then what you refigure out. So, like you mentioned, I was diagnosed in end of 2018, beginning 2019. Mm-hmm. Also know that my timelines of that part of my life are really messed up. I'm really confused about what happened when. And when I look back, it's always a blur. I can't remember exactly which year what happened, which is strange because I usually have a very good memory. I realized last week that everybody who told me their birthday before I sort of got into my depression, I remember their birthday even now. And everyone who told me their birthday after that, I don't remember their birthday. I know them really well. Like, turns out cognitive constriction is a thing. So I got diagnosed then in 2019, and I think what I found most difficult to wrap my head around was why and how and what, because I have grown up in a family that has talked about mental health, and I know that it's a thing, and I know depression is a thing. And I thought I was a fairly self-aware human being. And it still took me very long to realize that I was struggling, to admit that I was struggling. I wrote my mom a letter from the Netherlands and posted it by post to India instead of sending her an email. And this was only after I stopped eating for like 4 days. And I was like, oh, okay, this is not normal behavior. And I also realized that for the first year or so, my head was like down. I wasn't seeing anything around me at all. And then, like a year and a half to my depression, I looked up and I realized, oh, so many other people are also struggling. But for the first year and a half, I just did not notice anyone around me or what was going on. I was completely consumed by just the chaos in my head. And so I was feeling the effects and the symptoms of my depression even before I actually got diagnosed, obviously. I think the biggest thing about my depression was that I always felt like I had so much privilege that I was not allowed to be depressed. And I feel very silly talking about it. And even now, I have to remind myself, like the not kind voice in my head, sometimes even now still has to be reminded, that you are allowed to feel whatever you want to feel. Because I'm going around being a, like voicing, speaking up for everybody else's mental health and going like, you're allowed to feel what you want to feel, no matter what you went through. And I have so much stigma against my own mental health. It is extremely hypocritical of me. But I guess that's also part of the disorder, that it sort of confuses your mind. I have been on medication and then stopped my medication because I've read a book that said, don't get on medication. And so it was a bit up and down. But last July, so I found out I have cyclic depression, which means approximately every 8 to 10 months, I have a big crash. Apart from the little ones that happen otherwise, but those are manageable. When I say a big crash, I mean I won't be able to get out of bed at all, for like 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and then maybe I'll be able to get up and brush my teeth. But like I'm a vegetable. You ask me anything, I don't know. And it's not because I'm too lazy to say, I actually don't know. Should I sit with you? I don't know. Should I go away? I don't know. Do you want something? I don't know. My brain has just closed off. It's great. It's for those like little while that the mean voice in my head has to keep quiet and accept and believe that I'm actually feeling terrible and I'm not making it up and I physically cannot do anything about this. So it's just for that little while that the not so kind part of my mind shuts up. And then as I get to start feeling better, it comes back. So, but sorry, sidetrack. I was having a conversation with my therapist and I realized that I don't want that voice to go away because that voice is also my rational voice. It's the one that grounds me and it's the one that keeps me in check. It's just a little harsher and meaner than is healthy. Because it's also the voice that doesn't let me play victim and just roll over and give up. It's also the voice that, it's like tough love, but it needs to be balanced in a healthy way and not in a mean way. So anyway, this time when I had my dip, I couldn't get out of bed for months, which was not how it's been before. And I couldn't figure out why. Yes, I was off my medication and I had to restart my medication. But also, it was just like I was so upset that after 4.5 years, 5 years of working on myself, starting a mental health company, I was back to zero, feeling completely helpless. And even though I had learned so many things, and even though technically I had experience, like my body had experiential knowledge that it would get out of this, I did not do it. And usually, Yes, I have negative thoughts, but somewhere in the back of my mind, I know that I don't believe them. I'm having the negative thoughts, but I don't believe them. Like I can argue myself out of it. But for that while, I believed it. I know you're telling me it will get better, but it's not good. I genuinely don't believe it at this point. And I think part of that was because of how frustrated I was that it was back. And so I got in touch with my psychiatrist, and this time I asked her 50 million questions. I was like, explain to me what is going on. Learn to manage this, and it's never going to go away? Or is my goal that if I practice self-care, I learn to emotionally regulate myself, and I don't have any new trauma, then technically, eventually, I should get out of this. So she said that for the near future, it's not going away. So I said, okay. Also, because the world is all over the place sometimes, and mental health is a little, different people have different approaches to it. So I've realized that some psychiatrists don't like to give you a label because they think it might be helpful for you to not get a label. And it's true. A lot of times it scares people to have a label, or it makes them feel, well, categorized. And so it can be not helpful sometimes to get a label. But for me, she didn't give me a label. But I don't think she realized that not getting a label meant that my mind could keep telling me that I'm faking it, and that I actually don't have a disorder, and I'm just doing this for attention, and I'm a baby, and whatever. It was allowed to say all those mean things because the doctor was not telling me that this is your disorder. So this time I asked her all my questions, and I was like, give me clarity on what this is. And I've never been suicidal because I'm too afraid of pain. But I was like, this is not going away, and I don't know how I'm going to live the rest of my natural existence like this, because everyone around me is going to get completely sick of me because I just don't leave the bed. I'm always crying or sleeping. I'm not doing anything. At some point, no matter how much my family and friends love me, at some point, they will not want to deal with this. And I don't want them to have to deal with this. So I was like, I don't know what to do for my natural life because this doesn't seem to be going away. I Googled how to be happy. I have never in my life Googled how to be happy. And I was just at that point watching anything on the internet that said it could help me fight this. At some point, I was just like, well, hopefully the medicine will kick in. Until then, this is just it. I started to feel like my analysis was not working, so I tried to increase how many times a week I went, and then I also tried to do cognitive behavioral therapy because my analysis was not helpful, and my psychiatrist said to try that. And I was at this point, I was like, I'll try anything. And then I realized that my therapy was not working because my analyst was just containing me. Analysis is when you do deep work into your thoughts and it's work that requires you to not be in a vulnerable place. If you're in a vulnerable place, then you can't work on yourself. You need to first be okay. And for 4 months, 5 months, 6 months, all my therapist was doing was holding me together. And so we weren't doing any work. She was just holding me and containing me. And I guess, I don't know when I figured this out. I think working at Agatsu also helped me because we conduct suicide prevention trainings and things like that, and I'm the instructor. So because I have to find a way to communicate these thoughts and these concepts to people, I have to become very clear about them myself. And so I think that also helped me, because what I realized is that we talk about mental health as a biosocial psychological model now, which basically means that you can have diabetes in your family and then be more likely to get diabetes and live healthy and never get diabetes, or you can have no diabetes in your family and still get diabetes. So there is a biological part of it, but there's also like a like nature versus nurture types. There is a biological aspect to it, but it's also how you behave, how you're brought up, the things that happen. And so I realized that I systematically walked myself into depression, and I blamed myself for it. But then I think my medicine started to work. But then at some point, I realized if I systematically walked into it, that means I can systematically walk out of it. And the fact that I spent whatever 15 years systematically walking into it, it's going to take me time to systematically walk out of it. It's not going to happen instantaneously. And I'm not kidding when I say I systematically walked into it, because I realized that. So with Agatsu, I started the company because I was so afraid that I have all these resources, I have all this privilege, and I felt so crippled by my fear. A, I was afraid that no one was being able to understand me. And then B, I was afraid that other people out there are not. And so I started the company. Even though I spent in a year and a half thinking about it, I started the company out of fear. And I was so overwhelmed by all this in India that the company did nothing for a year and a half, essentially. Like, we just I had ideas and then I didn't do them, because I was like, if I'm not accessible in 12 languages, we shouldn't start. If I can't do everything and fix any problem, we shouldn't start. And very long, I didn't do too much. Also, I had no idea what it's like to start a company. Apparently, companies are in infancy for the first 1,000 days. That's 3 years. I had no idea that startups are meant to be like fluctuating. And so I kept feeling like I'm failing. It was like failure after failure. And then I had my big depressive episode last year. So a few months ago that I've been complaining about how I'm failing and failing and failing. But actually, my biggest goal in life has been to be a little broken on the inside. I remember thinking to myself as a child that spies and superheroes and the protagonists of films are conditioned physically and emotionally. So, you'll see them doing push-ups, you'll see them getting tortured by people, but they will bear the torture and they will save the day at the end of the movie. They will save the whole world, but they will be a little bit broken on the inside. And I was like, this is what I want to be, because this will make you loved. People will love you if you are physically and emotionally conditioned, a little broken on the inside, and you save the day. And then my therapist was like, yes, movies, but also your parents. And I was like, okay, I get it. I drew the connection from movies. I mean, I guess my parents also, in the sense that they put up a united front when they got divorced, and they handled the whole thing pretty well. Both families were still happy with each other. They like there were no fights, none of that. And so it was always like, it's not a big deal. We got a divorce, but it's fine. And the thing is, it's fine, but there's still pain that needs to be dealt with. There's still now a different reality. And so you need to acknowledge that. And they didn't acknowledge their pain. So, because they were going through pain, but they wouldn't show it to us. And so she was like, yeah, even, your parents essentially saved the day, but they don't feel pain, and they're also a little bit broken on the inside. And I was like, okay. So as a child, I would tell myself to suppress my feelings, and I would tell myself to pretend and to be what other people wanted to be, because I knew that if I did that, if I bottled up my emotions, I would turn into a slightly broken person. And so systematically, since the age of six, I have been trying to bottle my emotions, pretend to be whoever the person around me wanted me to be, all of these things, so that I turned into a slightly broken person. And guess what? I succeeded. I did. And I achieved the one thing in my life that I've always wanted to be able to do. And then I realized people who love you will love you anyway, even if you're not slightly broken on the inside. And I was like, damn it, now I have to undo all of this. And it started with blame, but then my therapist and I guess other things sort of made me have to see that all of these things were ideas that I thought of as a child. And I, so even though technically I did this to myself, I did it because I thought that that's the only way out. And you can't expect a child to realize that there are other ways to be loved. And now that I am not a child anymore and I have realized those things, I can change that. So yes, it'll be time and effort, but it's not something I don't have control over. I actually have complete control over me and so I can walk myself out of it. And so something switched after this depressive episode. And I think it sounds very cliche, but I think I accepted my disorder. And so since then, I don't know how, but I have managed to do all the things that I have known for the past 6 years that I'm supposed to do. Like, if you've been working in this field or reading anything about mental health, all the tools are out there. You know what you're supposed to be doing to feel better. You know what the healthy thing is supposed to be, but you just can't get yourself to do it for some reason. And so now what's happened is that I end up doing one self-care thing without even trying to do it. Like, I don't even have to remind myself to do it or whatever. I end up doing it. And I want to do it. And it doesn't seem like so much effort to do it. Yeah, that's like this switch happened. And I also watched this video by someone, a psychologist named Guy Winch, and I was like, I haven't figured out what I want to do with the because all this while I sort of knew, but I couldn't articulate it. And I watched that video, and I watched it 16 times before it hit me that that's what you. So he talks about emotional hygiene and how 50 years ago, 100 years ago, we started to brush our teeth and wash our hands, and suddenly we didn't get so many diseases. And so if we started to practice emotional hygiene, and then he tells you exactly what it is. So it's not just some theoretical blabber. It actually tells you what to do, because there are evidence-based strategies that people have come up with that we can do. Then we would all be happier and healthier. And this is not to say that all the problems will go away. Of course, there will still be problems. There will still be severe mental health disorders that are predominantly genetic. But since COVID, since things are far more digital, we have far less real connections. They did some very scary study about how vendors go at least 3 people on average that they felt close to, and now that number has come down to 2. And for the world average to go from 3 to 2 takes a lot of people to say that they have lost connections. And so, I mean, the statistics of genetic disorders is going to stay the same. There's not much we can do about it. But the number of people who I think are unknowingly getting into mental distress is something that can be looked into. And I also think that there's a whole spectrum, right, between distress and disorder. And I can't find anyone who can define it. So I have a definition. My definition is when you stop being functional, it's a disorder. When you are functional, it is distress. That's the line. Because otherwise, it's just, anything is anything. So if it's affecting your day-to-day functioning, it's a disorder. And otherwise, it's still serious, but it's distress. Is how I look at it from my understanding of it. And yeah, so like for me, I have mental health disorders in my family. So the likeliness of me to develop a disorder was higher, but also I did it. And so now that I triggered that in me, it's there. But for the most part, I can learn to manage it. And also then, there's some people who talk about how depression is the best thing that happened to them in the sense that they learned so much about themselves. And they've, become whoever they've become now because of what they had to deal with is something that they're proud of. And I don't know if I would use those words, but I definitely know that because I didn't have a choice, I had to deal with these emotions. I had to become aware of certain things about myself. I mean, it's definitely made me a healthier person, in terms of my relationships with people, in terms of my relationship with myself. I have far more honest and real relationships now than I did before. And for me, it was because I didn't have a choice. I had to fix these things. I had to learn how to draw my boundaries. I had to learn how to communicate with people, even when I didn't want to. A big part of adulting is communicating. I really wish people would do it before they would do it because it's a good idea and not when they're in the, at rock bottom. Don't wait to hit rock bottom because then it takes so much longer to come up. If you do it when you're here, it'll take less time. If you do it when you're here, it'll take far more time. But I also know that no matter how much you tell someone, they're going to take their own time to go through the journey themselves. And so that's what I'm trying to do with Agatsu. I'm trying to get people to start to take care of themselves before anything goes bad. Because it's much easier to integrate it into your life when you're okay. When you're doing really badly, then you have to deal with your symptoms first. You can't start practicing emotional hygiene because first you have to recover. And so it's like self-care. When I'm feeling really down in the dumps, my mind and body have this much energy. I'm not going to do anything that I don't entirely trust will make me feel better because I have this much energy. And my familiarity and my comfort with my depression is going to keep me in bed because I know that. I know what it'll feel like, and I'm sure about that. The self-care thing you're asking me to do, I don't know whether it'll work or not. And so I'm not spending any extra energy on that because I don't have any. But if I practice self-care on the regular, when I'm not feeling bad, when I'm feeling okay, then my body has a recent memory of that self-care thing working. And so it is more likely that when I'm not feeling so good, I'll actually do that thing because it's not like you're telling me to paint and the last time I painted and felt happy about it was 5 years ago. And so now you're telling me, you used to enjoy painting when you were small. Maybe you should try painting. My body doesn't remember that I used to enjoy painting. It was very long time ago. And right now, it's not going to spend energy on something that it doesn't trust will make it feel better. And so if you practice self-care and you find out what works for you when you're not feeling so crap, then there's a higher chance that you'll do it when you are feeling bad, because it's not like your body doesn't want to make you feel better. It's not like your mind doesn't want to make you feel better. In fact, all of this is self-preservation. All of this is trying to protect you from pain. Unfortunately, we don't necessarily do the healthy thing long term. We don't necessarily do the long-term healthy thing to avoid, just to protect ourselves. We end up doing eventually, I guess we end up doing the immediate thing to help from pain and avoid pain. That's why we're not doing the self-care thing, because we're not sure whether it'll help. And so if you can make your body and mind trust and find the things that do help you, it's more likely that you'll do it and that you'll get there. And that only happens if you do it when you're not feeling so bad. How to convince the world of this? I don't know. My secret plan, which now is no longer secret because I'm telling you about it on an interview which you're going to post on YouTube, is that the community center at Agatsu does a whole bunch of fun things. So we call you to the center to do a whole bunch of fun things for free. And then when you're here, we're like, hey, you want to think about this? Hey, you want to think about that? And we're sneakily going to get you to care about your mental health. Because also, the last thing that I want to add is that you can't get stuck in your, I mean, you can't, life is in the doing. So, yes, reflect, introspect about yourself and your mental health and all of those things. But you also have to live. So at some point, you have to get out of your head and do things. And so don't take your mental health seriously. You will get tired. Take your mental health sincerely, little bit, day by day, as much as you can. And remember that you also have to have fun. And so it has to be a balance of making mistakes, of having fun, of being sincere about what you want to be sincere about. So when I say mental health and I say let's work on your mental health and emotional hygiene, I don't mean boring, sad, unfun things. I mean actually fun things. Then you'll start to find fun once you start doing them. That's all I have to say about my story anyway.
Aya, you have had a really emotional journey, and we're really thankful that you've shared it with us and our audiences today. And I think just being able to talk about it, as you said, in informed spaces, coming from a place where you're along the road of recovery, kind of gives you more insight on where you've been, where you're going, and kind of take more control of sort of the narrative, right? So like you said, that you came from a place where you felt that you had walked yourself into this depression, and that I love the fact that you feel that now that you walked yourself in, you are able to now see that you can walk yourself out of it as well. And one thing that I wanted to even ask you is that you've had a lot of people around you, and you've also seen the way the media sort of perceives mental health firsthand. So in your opinion, what have been some things that maybe the people around you have said, or you've seen in the media, especially when you came first and spoke out about your mental health, that was helpful as well as unhelpful. in your journey?
Okay, I don't read what the media says about me. So honestly, I don't know what the media said. What I do know is that I put out a 9-minute video and mostly the media cares about me because of my father. And so they're not going to listen to a 9-minute video about my depression. So I don't know how many of them actually watch the entire video. And so I know that they put like, I don't know whether I should say this. I'm going to say it and then I'm going to leave it to you if you want to cut it out. But in my 9-minute video about my mental health, I spoke about my sexual abuse. Now it was somewhere in minute six, so I don't know when, but it was in the at some point in the video. You would imagine that the way the media is these days and the way everything is clickbait these days, that would have been like the headline. It took them 3 days to figure out that that was in the video, which means they didn't watch the whole video until someone watched the video and figured it out. And so I feel like I don't really read or see what the media says for two reasons. One is that I'm not entirely sure why they're reporting things. I'm not sure what their goal is with that. Because if your goal was just to report things, then you would do that diligently. The other reason I don't look at my social media comments and the media itself is because no matter how strong I am and no matter how secure in myself I am, if you have 900 people saying horrible things to you, you can be made of steel and that negativity is still going to get to you. Even if they're not saying horrible things about you and they're just saying horrible things to each other and fighting with each other, it doesn't matter. If there's so much negativity, it is going to affect anybody, wherever that negativity is directed. And I don't need that. I have enough negativity in my own mind. I don't need your negativity. So I don't read things about the media, and that's in the media. So I can't tell you that. I do know that I no longer like the word self-care. I no longer like the word mindfulness, and I no longer like the word mental health. It makes me cringe, and it's really sad because I feel very strongly about all those three things. Truly, genuinely feel very strongly about those. What they seem to be associated with now makes me cringe. So that I find extremely not helpful from the media point of view. But that's not just media, right? That's just people in general as well. That's influencers. That's everybody who wants to make money off this mental health movement. And there's nothing wrong with making money off the mental health movement, just like then do the good stuff also, right? However, when I put up my videos initially on Instagram, I did say that I would read every single comment that those videos got. And so I did. I read every single comment and I replied to every single comment. And if they were hate messages, then I just deleted them. But for a couple of weeks, I did try to make my Instagram a safe space. But now I have decided my Instagram is not a safe space at all. Please don't come to my Instagram page if you want it to be a safe space. The comments are very horrible. It's not a safe space. But at that point, I was trying to make it a safe space. And so I would delete every comment that was mean and I would reply to every comment. And some people sent me really sweet messages, like really sweet messages. And I was like, if I have made four people on this planet feel better, that's fine. I accept. I will do this. I will, if it makes you feel better, then yes, cool. So in terms of digital social media, that has been my experience with it.
Right. And, you know, I think you've very rightly capitalized on how the fact that, you know, sometimes the narratives around mental health, around self-care, around mindfulness, which have come out now, either portray it to be something very indulgent or very privileged to be having that conversation, right? You're almost looked at as, you know, oh, you're just being too selfish if you're thinking about yourself, but look at what else is happening in the world, that there's like a billion people starving or struggling, so that, you know, you don't have that right to complain. And I think one of the things that you spoke about is you firsthand felt that, you know, that sometimes you have felt that, you know, am I in a very privileged position to be struggling, and maybe we shouldn't be struggling. But at the same time, I think people will draw that inspiration from your story that you still went out, you still seeked, you know, sought help for what you were going through, and sort of took that step forward that, you know, mental health is not a privilege thing. I mean, it appears to be, but I think we all need to sort of act upon poor mental health or distress, or before it becomes almost like a disorder, as you said, and sort of practice that emotional hygiene. But I had another thing that, you know, wanted to ask you that, you know, what are a few things that you feel that, you know now that you wish you had known earlier?
So many things. You mean in life in general, or specific to my depression?
It could be related to, you know, your mental health journey. That has there been something that's come out of it? Did you know sometimes you wish you knew earlier? Like one of the things you did talk about was about just accepting that little bit of brokenness, and that, you know, people around us will love us anyway.
I think I learned a lot of things. I learned that I realized, so I, sorry, what you said about, you know, mindfulness and self-care and mental health, what is the point? And one is the privilege aspect. But the other is that everyone's now saying it and using it and doing something about it. You've taken the time to attend a webinar or something, and then you've not found it useful, you've found it superficial. And so then I understand why you're like, self-care stuff is pointless. Because I felt that way about affirmations. I was like, what are affirmations and why are they even there? This sounds ridiculous. Looking at myself in the mirror and lying to myself is not helping me. And the thing is, I don't think the internet has ever explained to me or what affirmations actually are. At one point, I was sitting and I realized what it is. When I was in college and I started to take some medication that my GP prescribed me, so it was not like a proper antidepressant or anything. It was, I don't remember now what it was, but it was something my GP had prescribed, not a psychiatrist. It was a very mild medication. And I had started my analysis. And I, at some point, realized that some days I would just give up and just be like, you know what, today is over, forget about it. Tomorrow, I will wake up and I'll try again. And it's okay, today's over, I'll watch TV and just let this time pass. And what I realized is that the fact that I was willing to get up and try again the next day, and then I would, being able to try would help me achieve, which would help me try. And so how frequently I had breakdowns reduced, and it took, and I had longer time between each breakdown, to a point where I got much, much better. And then I had a giant breakdown. But, you know, I realized that the cliche, try and try till you succeed, is a thing and it works. But for me, I had to phrase it as tomorrow's another day. So for me, the affirmation is not try till you succeed. For me, the affirmation is tomorrow is another day. And saying that to myself in a moment where I don't feel so good will make me feel better because I realized it myself. For me to say it. So I realized that you need to come up with your own affirmations that resonate with you, that you have learned through your experience so that you believe them. So that even when your mind is telling you things that are not nice, you can say those sentences and they will make you feel better because you reach those conclusions yourself. And none of this is rocket science, but it requires you to stop and think in an emotionally invested manner. And you can't do that in a capitalistic world. So, so I find those things not helpful. And I was telling you this because things that I learned, that a whole bunch of cliches are actually true. And you'll find out along the way that they are. I also realized that communication is mind-blowing. If you learn to communicate, half your problems will be gone. And it takes time. Communicate so that you all can figure it out. But it does wonders to you know, alleviate conflict, to make you feel closer to someone. Vulnerability is, I love vulnerability. It's just genius. If you feel like you need to connect with anyone, you need to get through to anyone about anything, just be vulnerable. It will work. Because when you're being genuine and entirely vulnerable, be careful to see if you're ready for it. But it's so powerful and so powerful in connecting you to other people. Yeah, being vulnerable. Reaching out to people. Get over yourself and ask for help. Everyone needs it. And also, I used to feel bad to have to ask my best friend to remind me to eat or to help me clear up. And the thing is, if my best friend asked me to do it, I would help her. It would take this much energy from me to help her do something she's struggling to do. And it'll make such a big impact on her life and this much impact on my life. So yeah, of course I'd do it for her. And so yeah, of course she'd do it for me. But I didn't ask her because I thought it made me a baby. And it made me not be an adult. And it made me irresponsible and slacking in my adulting. And since my whole problem was that I was faking my depression and I had done this to myself and so it was my fault, I was not allowed to be more of a baby and ask for help in things that I should have been able to do myself. And I just also wanted to put out there that I'm an extremely rational human being, and still I would, my mind would say a rational thing and an irrational thing in one sentence. So even though you think you've logically figured it out and you're actually an intelligent person who should be able to figure it out, it's irrational. There's nothing to figure out. It doesn't make sense. We are not rational beings. We are not logical beings. We are also, we are emotional beings. And so a lot of it will not make sense. And there's no point in trying to rationalize it. There is an intangible in our minds that we don't know and we don't understand yet. And so trying to only rationally figure it out is just going to frustrate you. And it's probably not going to get you anywhere.
No, I think that's been really helpful. Thank you so much, Ira. I know you've shared a lot of your story with us. You've shared a lot of, insights, not just about what you went through, but I think what would support someone else who might be in a similar position to kind of not just reach out and seek help, but also to know, what to expect on that journey. As you said, like even for you, it's not been linear, but also all the self-discovery that comes with it, and that it's not wrong to reach out to people when you're struggling, and how you shouldn't view yourself either as a burden or as someone who's sort of failing just because you're struggling. And I think those are some realities which, when we are struggling, we sometimes forget. And especially people like you, me, and other people who might be watching who work in the space of mental health, that sometimes we feel very much like an imposter, that, we tell people to go out there, we tell people go seek help. And when it comes to ourselves, sometimes we forget that, we're also people who are going to need help through this process. So, as you said, and sometimes we forget that even therapists need therapists. So, anyone watching this who, if you are struggling, if you are having a hard time, please know that there's always help out there, and there is hope out there. So it doesn't always stay that way, it gets better. So if you are having a hard time, make sure you reach out, make sure you get help, and know that things get better. So until next time, please stay well and stay healthy. Thank you.